United States.
Intergenerational mobility. Moving on up. Class, race, and the chances of outgrowing poverty in America.
In late 20th century music, the elusiveness of the American dream is a recurring theme. From Stevie Wonder's ode to a boy born in Hard Time, Mississippi in 1973, to Bruce Springsteen's anthems to the working class in Factory Shutters Town in the 1980s, frustration with people's inability to outgrow their circumstances is rife. The timing of the peak of that genre is no coincidence. Whereas nearly all American children born in 1940 could still expect to do better than their parents, only 2 in 5 could by 1984. Last week, J.D. Vance, who's born that year, reprised the theme as he accepted the Republican Party's nomination for vice president. He promised all the forgotten communities in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, and every corner of our nation, to be a vice president who never forgets where he came from. A new study by Raj Chetty of Harvard University and colleagues provides fresh data on how America's landscape of opportunity has shifted sharply over the past decades. Although at the national level there has only been small declines in mobility, the places and groups that have become more or less likely to enable children to rise up have changed a lot. The most striking finding is that, compared with the past, a child's race is now less relevant for predicting their future, and their socioeconomic class more so. The greatest drops in mobility have not been in the places evoked in song, but on the coasts and the Great Plains, which historically provided pathways up. 15 years ago, the American dream was alive and well for white children born to low-income parents in much of the Northeast and West Coast, says Benjamin Goldman of Cornell University, one of the co-authors. Now those areas have outcomes on par with Appalachia, the Rust Belt, and parts of the Southeast. The fact that white children have become more likely to remain in poverty than before, whereas for black children the reverse is true, raises many questions. The finding comes from tracing the trajectories of the 57 million children born in America between 1978 and 1992, and looking at their outcomes by the age of 27. This is really the first look with modern big data into how opportunity can change within a place over time, says Mr. Goldman. For children born into high-income families, household income increased for all races between birth cohorts. Yet among those from low-income families, earnings rose for black children and fell for white children. A black child born to poor parents in 1992 earned $1,400 a year, more than one born in 1978. A similar white child earned $2,000 less than one born in 1978. But on average, a poor white child still earned $9,500 more than a poor black child. This pattern has played out in virtually every county, though with big regional differences. As a result, the earnings gap between rich and poor white children, the class gap, grew by 27%, whereas the earnings gap before poor white and poor black children, the race gap, fell by 28%. The class gap did not meaningfully change for non-white people. This convergence between poor white and poor black children is as much the result of improved mobility for black children as it is of decreased mobility for white ones. The effects echo in other outcomes too. The gap in early adulthood mortality between rich and poor white Americans more than doubled between the 1978 and 1992 birth cohorts, while the white-black race gap for the same metric fell by 77%. Other gaps between black and white Americans, from SAT uptake and rates of graduation to rates of marriage and incarceration, have narrowed similarly. None of this means that race is no longer relevant for Americans' chances in life. Although the reversal of the direction of travel is striking, a young black American born in 1992 to poor parents was still 4 percentage points more likely to remain in poverty than a poor white peer, down from a 15 percentage point gap for those born in 1978. And while the near doubling in rates of mortality among young, lower-income white Americans is deeply alarming, mortality rates for their black counterparts have increased too, and they are still, a bit, more likely to die young. In polarized America, where race remains a divisive topic, some are bound to misappropriate the findings. Anti-woke conservatives will claim that the data shows how white privilege is a myth, and that programs targeting poor black children should instead invest in poor white ones. Woke warriors will argue that race remains the most important factor holding children back from upward mobility, and so dismiss concerns about left-behind white kids. Both are wrong. Convergence has not yet brought equality. Despite improvements across America for poor black children, there is still no county where their outcomes match those of poor white ones. yet the decline of the white working class is steep and bound to cause grief. Telling a young white man with lower life outcomes than previous generations that he is still doing better than the average black peer is about as useful as telling a young black man that he's doing well for a black man. Another possible misconception is that social mobility is a zero-sum game, that poor white children are doing worse because poor black children are doing better. The authors tackle this by showing how, in places where black children have done well, white children's outcomes have remained stable, and in places where white children have done particularly poorly, their black peers have also not thrived. In his previous work, Mr. Chetty demonstrated just how much a child's chances of outperforming their parents depended on their race and where they grew up. One of the questions the authors were left with was how sticky these effects could be over time. Could opportunities for the next cohorts of children change within these same places, or were they fixed? The new study's most hopeful finding is that, far from being fixed, opportunities within a place can change significantly and rapidly. Neither history nor place is destiny. This offers clues for policymakers. Jobs and their role in ensuring that communities flourish are at the heart of understanding these big shifts. Children's outcomes are tightly correlated with those of the communities in which they grow up. The narrowing of the race gap and widening of the white class gap, write the authors, can be explained almost entirely by the sharp fall in employment rates for low-income white parents relative to low-income black and high-income white parents. Growing up in a thriving community is crucial for children's future outcomes, and which communities have been thriving over the past 15 years has changed in a way that relatively disadvantages poor white families. In the past 15 years, we've seen a decline in conditions in low-income white communities relative to low-income black and high-income white communities, concludes Mr. Goldman. Americans love a rags-to-riches story. In his acceptance speech last week, Mr. Vance pledged to make this country a place where every dream will be possible once again. In his best-selling book, Hillbilly Elegy, he writes that the assumption that only a truly extraordinary person could have made it to where I am today, I think that theory is a load of bullshit. But the story of Mr. Vance, who grew up in a poor part of the Rust Belt, rose to be a venture capitalist, and now, at 39, is a potential American president, remains extraordinarily rare. While there has been a reshuffling of opportunities for Americans trying to escape the lowest rung, there has been no progress at all for roots into the upper class. For the vast majority of poor black children, who continue to have a 3% chance of rising from the bottom to the top quintile, and poor white children, whose chances have fallen from 14% to 12%, that door remains firmly shut.